White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 732.
Hi, this is Andy Bertram, voice of the Auburn Tigers, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast, War Eagle.
Could Auburn's kicking game have really been so blah last season? The AU Wishbone is next!
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
From the palatial White Rocket Studios in Southern Illinois and Eastern Virginia, it's the AU Wishbone Podcast. John, how are you tonight?
Very well, Van. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very excited about a bunch of things. I am your host, Van Allen Plexico. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
So, John, we've got a lot of little tidbits, a few. One of our ongoing annual series begins tonight with the position reviews that you always like to put together. It's all very informative and cool. We got some news and other stuff going on. And so what is on your mind as we roll into tonight's discussion?
Well, number one, what's on my mind is a bunch of thunderstorms going on here. So if in the middle of the podcast, Van is talking by himself for a while, it's because the internet went out or the power went out. At some point, I might be able to come back. So, other than that, it is the deep, dark depths of the off season, Van.
Yep,
We're a long way from shore in both directions at this point. It's like, oh.
Yeah, we really are. I mean, I finally tracked down a copy of my second college football ball magazine a couple of days ago. I had the Athlon, now I have the Lindy's. Haven't seen the Phil Steele out in the world in the wild yet. I don't know if it's even been released yet. I know the online people got it. I don't know if it's been printed yet, but haven't seen it. Usually it floats around. A lot of fantasy football magazines and pro football magazines out taking up the space on the stands right now. But I'm going to sit down with the Lindy's and kind of dig through it when I get a chance. Hopefully it's got different information than usually they're pretty different from Athlon. And I was really disappointed in the Athlon this year. It didn't have like the coaches. It didn't have a lot of information that's just basic information I expect them to have. It was all taken up with kind of like predictions and stuff, but there weren't any just facts really. There wasn't, they have a little box that says, here's the head coach, here's how many years he's been coaching, here's the offensive coordinator, here's the defensive coordinator, here was their record last year, the wins and losses, here's their schedule. None of that was in there. I was really surprised. So we'll see. But a couple of things that are funny. One about the thunderstorms, I was just pointing out to you a minute ago that I've done three podcasts this week moving from west to east across the country, and I keep running into the people I'm on with keep having the thunderstorms. So we've determined that either I'm following the storms, I've become the Storm Chaser podcast, or storms pop up wherever I dial in for a podcast. That's a pretty cool
correlation power. Correlation is causation, man. You're making it happen.
I'm making it happen, apparently. That's right. I'll take it. So anyway, let's look at... Before we do anything else tonight, our new opening feature. It's the Auburn Fun Meter, John. It's where you and I decide on a scale of 0 to 10 how much fun it is to be an Auburn fan this week. And in the offseason, it's kind of hard. I think we'll have a very easy time with it in the season, right? If we win, we'll be excited. If we lose, we'll be down and all that. But right now, I mean, where would you say you are on the 0 to 10 Auburn Fun Meter scale right now?
I was up last week because of the recruiting and the schedule release, but now I'm coming back down because it's the off season, and I'm like, ugh. So I'm going to say 5.5.
Yeah. I mean, we got the basketball. We didn't even get a schedule. We got kind of like who they're going to play in the conference. That's nice, but that wasn't great. Hasn't been a lot of big news the last few days, so I'm with you. I'm about a 5.5 right now, too. I did see a cool picture of, it must be at a golf event or something, but did you see the picture this afternoon? It was Bruce, Pearl, and Freeze, and little Bruce, and Gus was in there.
I saw that.
I always like seeing them all together, right? They all get along and are good buddies, and that's really cool. And everybody's like, we still love Gus. He's part of the family, you know. I like it when we move along from a coach, but there's still, there's still a connection, and they still, I mean, because we were so spoiled with Pat Dye that way. Pat Dye was like our elder statesman. He didn't go anywhere. I remember, one time I heard a sports radio person in another part of the country saying, oh, Auburn must, you know, they must really hate Pat Dye. And I'm like, we don't hate Pat Dye. We love Pat Dye. So it's nice to see them getting along, I think. And it's good to have them that are still part of the family. And I don't think anybody, there's people that were disappointed in Gus and how it went. But I don't think anybody dislikes him in a visceral way, right? Am I wrong there? I mean,
there's probably some small percentage of people that feel that way about him, but it goes, he can't please everybody.
Right. I agree. So, all right. So we're both about a 5.5 on the fun meter. All right. Football. Well, recruiting continues, but nothing really much to report. What do we got to talk about on the recruiting scoreboard tonight?
It's been going well. It's been going strong. They're hoping to get a couple more people on the board before we head into the dead period where they can't contact recruits anymore for, you know, basically the month of July. And it's good because it gives the coaches, the assistant coaches and the coaches a break. They can go, you know, spend time with their families and take a vacation and stuff and get away from it where they've been going 100 miles an hour for, you know, 6 months. So it's good for them to get away. So I think we've made a bunch of progress. I think they're hoping to get one or two commits before the dead period kicks in. And then coming out of the dead period, they'll be, you know, pushing hard between then and the season to, you know, get a few more commits. I think we want to be up around 15, 16 commits at the start of our regular season. So that's the plan.
And it looks like we're really trying hard to flip this Alabama commitment receiver, Perry Thompson. I think there's another receiver, too.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great. I saw, I think it was Justin Ferguson this afternoon on Twitter said that Auburn hasn't signed a composite five-star receiver since 2002. I think that I was trying to think which one it was in 2002. I think it was Aroma Shadu. May have been Obamanu. It was one of them. One of them was a five. One was a four.
Here's another question for you based on the stuff that you put out earlier today. Are you ready? It's a good trivia question for you and the listeners.
Yes.
Who was the last Auburn receiver who was voted all SEC at the end of the season?
Well, it should have been Seth Williams, but I'm going to guess that it wasn't since that wasn't.
I'm going to say first team all SEC.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, well, then I don't think – was there anybody on Cam or Nick Marshall's teams or even – maybe Ryan Davis? 2017 Ryan Davis maybe? No? I mean, Nick Marshall had a few good receivers. I mean, but I don't – the one that caught all the passes against Alabama in 14, the big tall guy, the big dude. I can't ever think of his name. Darvin Adams maybe, but that's a long time ago. Wow. Before 2010, 2009, I mean, not Terrell Zachary. Before that batch, the previous big batch was the 2002 through 2006 crowd, which is Courtney Taylor, Ben Obamanu, and Devin Aromashadu, and Anthony Mix. Any of those? No? Further back. Speak. I can't. Yeah, further back. Okay. God, Ronnie. Was it Ronnie Daniels?
The last
Lawyer Tillman
receiver who was voted all-conference first team, Frank Sanders.
Oh, my goodness.
1994.
Holy cow, Frank. That's almost 30 years ago. See, if you'd said, well, I'll give you a hint. The quarterback that threw the ball to him was named Nix. People would be like, oh, it's Seth Williams, of course. Well, wrong Nix. Try again, wrong Nix.
I just think that's crazy.
Yeah.
But it also just goes to show, like, it's not just the recruiting of the wide receivers. It's the super high-level production. We've got to get more big-time wide receiver play in the next 5 years.
I really am surprised, though, that Courtney Taylor didn't as awesome as he was. I mean, I would rank our receivers the last few years. Again, the ones from 13, 14, 15 are hard for me to remember. I remember Seth Williams recently and Ryan Davis before him. There were a couple that Nick Marshall threw to. I can't remember their names right now. There was Duke Williams, of course, in that period too. Then you go back to the ones that Cam threw to, which was Terrell Zachary and Darvin Adams were awesome. And then before them, it was really that bunch that came in all together in 2002. Obamanu, Aroma Shadu, Taylor, Mix. that was the one of the best receiving classes, you know, we ever had. Right before them, it was Damian Craig's crowd, which was like Tyrone Goodson, Karsten Bailey. They were great.
Nix? Huh? Nix and Goodson, right? Were they both on that?
I don't.
Karsten Bailey was really good.
Yeah, Karsten Bailey, Eric Lowe, the touchdown, Baker. Stephen Baker was there briefly. But Tyrone Goodson, Karsten Bailey, Eric Lowe, that was the crowd that was so good with Damian Craig. And then, I mean, and then right after that was Ronnie Daniels in 99, 2000. Before that, you got to go back before all of that to get to, I can't believe Ronnie Daniels didn't make that list. You got to be kidding me. Just against freaking
Georgia.
One game.
But some of it, I think some of these guys made like third team all SEC. Yeah. And there were some all American monster receiver types that year. So.
Yeah, we know that every team has had some. I mean, LSU's had a handful. Tennessee has had a handful. There was one guy at Mississippi State. Oh, Florida, God, yeah, under Spurrier. And then later they had huge receivers. Yeah, you're right. So there was always somebody. There was always, you know, Ole Miss had a big guy. Mississippi State had a big guy there a few years ago. Georgia's had some, so though not as many as you'd think. So, yeah, that's true. Arkansas, when Petrino was there, had some. So, yeah, it's true. It always seems like when we have our really good receivers, somebody else has the all-pro out there. So, that's true. Interesting. That's crazy, though, that you have to go all the way back to Frank freaking Sanders and Nix to Sanders to get the – man, that's crazy. It's hard also to think that Damian Craig and all the quarterbacks – Damian Craig, Jason Campbell, Cam Newton, and Nick Marshall – and Jarrett Stidham, none of them had a first-team All-SEC receiver to throw to. That's amazing.
That's insane.
Yeah, none of them did. You got to go all the way back to Stan White and Patrick Nix. Well, anyway, a couple other football things that I had noted here. I've been noticing that a lot of predictions have been coming out about what our record's going to be, and the consensus seems to be 6-6. 24/7 went out on a limb and said 7-5. Now, we're not to the barbecue yet, and I don't want to venture into barbecue territory, but the thing that I keep thinking is our schedule is easier than it was last year, and everything else about this team, except for maybe, you know, missing Tank Bigsby, everything and our defensive linemen, other than losing those two guys, this seems like everything is better this year. Better coach, better coaching staff. Players that we brought in are better than the ones that left. Easier schedule, much easier out of conference game, although we may not win it, but it's much easier. How can people think we're going to do worse than last year with all those factors trending up? I just don't see it.
I think you're right, but I also think a lot of people, you know, regionally and nationally don't see that.
I guess they just look at the matchups and don't think we're going to win them.
That's fair. And also, I think it's harder with the transfer portal to evaluate and compare teams in the offseason. It used to be, you know, at this point in time, we had a very good understanding of, like, who was coming back on every single SEC team and what that meant and what their strengths and weaknesses were going to be. And now, especially with a team like Auburn, we've thrown a bunch of guys in there. I think the offensive line is going to be dramatically better.
Yes.
The best it's been in, you know, at least 5 years, probably more. So I think that's going to be a big difference. But, you know, I think people don't always perceive that.
I saw a quote where Freeze was quoted as saying that he remembered Auburn in the past as always having really big, really athletic defensive linemen that were very difficult to contain, were his words. And he says, we don't have that now. We got to get back to it. I agree. For as long as we've been around, the one constant pretty much on our defense has been on our team has been really good defensive linemen. And that always shows up when we play teams from around the country that don't have that. Like when we played Oregon for the national championship, Cam was awesome and all that. But, you know, as much as Cam did in that game, our defensive line won that game for the national championship. They just totally shut Oregon's offense down for the most part.
Yes.
Got so much pressure on Darren, what's his name, the quarterback.
Thomas.
Yeah, Darren Thomas, and the running back. So I have faith, the way things are going now, I have faith that he will get us back to having a real Auburn defensive line.
I do too, but in my mind, that's one position where we haven't got a big-time recruit yet, and that's one where I want to see one. So,
you know, it was only 2019 that we had a great defensive line. So
best in the country.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long.
No.
Yeah, by the end of his career, Derrick Brown was doing things that Nick Fairley was doing in 2010, like single-handedly affecting the outcome of games to a degree.
Yes.
We need to get back to that. That was incredible. I still to this day remember how excited I was when I found out that Derrick Brown had committed to Auburn. To this day, I remember I was at the gas station down the street, and I heard it on my phone on like some podcast show or radio show, and I was like, oh my gosh, we got this awesome defensive lineman that Georgia wanted. I was like doing cartwheels in the parking lot, and it worked out.
Woo. It did.
Man, it worked out. Now, not to talk about much about Big Game Boomer as the source of this, because he is kind of a joke on Twitter, but he's a fun joke. I mean, give the guy or girl, whatever, give the person credit. They're Oklahoma fans. God bless them. That means they're going to be in the SEC now. They do put together some interesting lists and good just conversation starters, you know, and that's fine. Big Game Boomer did a listing of the top offensive line coaches in the country, and John, they ranked Jake Thornton of Auburn number 7 nationally. That's good to hear, isn't it?
It is, and I think, again, I think there are positions where we have upgraded. An offensive line coach is definitely one of them. I think he's the best offensive line coach we've had in a while. We'll see. But I'm very excited about him. I think he's definitely the best recruiting offensive line coach we've had in 20 years.
No doubt.
And I think he's going to make a difference there. So I'm very happy with him. May turn out to be the biggest hire Freeze made.
It may be. And the irony is the only SEC offensive line coach ranked ahead of him is Stacy Searles at Georgia. What's the irony there?
Went to Auburn. Played at Auburn.
He was a Pat Dye boy, man. Ugh. Old Coach Dye turned out some offensive line. An old offensive lineman himself, Coach Dye was.
That's true. And Stacy Searles is over there with their running back coach for Georgia, you know, who's another former Auburn player.
Who was their running back coach? I don't remember.
The guy that we tried to hire away from them.
I don't remember. Oh, wait. Was it our defensive back? Is he now there?
Del McGee.
Del McGee, yeah. Yeah, he was a defensive back for us. That's what confused me. Yeah, I knew they had Del McGee. Okay. I was thinking there was like, I was about to say what? Wait, Kerryon Johnson is coaching in Georgia now? Hold on a minute. Who's an Auburn running back that you would expect to turn up as a coach beside Kerryon? Because Kerryon, we're going to get to him in a minute. But obviously,
Cam Martin's already coaching somewhere.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that makes sense. Because he was real tight with Gus. Gus thought a lot of his intelligence and his everything. So that would make sense he'd be a coach. I remember Gus thought way more of him than we ever did as a running back. But that's a whole other thing. Yeah, that's right. So let me see. There's a couple other things. Now, we covered that one. Oh, here it is. Yeah. So, Justin Lee, good old Justin Lee. I love Justin Lee to death. Opelika Auburn News. He did an article a couple of days ago, if you folks haven't seen it, about he pointed out how Auburn this fall is traveling to California for a regular season game. Now, we've been to California for a bowl game in 2013, 2014. That didn't go so well. The less said about that, the better. But the last time I think that we went out there for a regular season game was when we played in the Coliseum in Los Angeles, at USC in 2002. And, John, that was a game we almost won. That one just ripped my guts out at the end. I thought we had one. That was the one where Cadillac dominated early, and he got cramps around halftime. Remember, and he just couldn't play very well in the second half. And without Cadillac, that team didn't have the passing game going yet, really. It would later. And this was before the emergence of Ronnie Brown. You know, Ronnie didn't really emerge as a threat until Cadillac got hurt in the Florida game.
That's right.
Ronnie's big coming out party was the second half at Florida when he brought us back from like double digits down and took him to overtime.
Yes.
But that game, that was the game that set, what's his name, on the road to the Heisman Trophy, their quarterback. Went on to play for the Bengals. I can't think of his name.
Carson Palmer,
yeah. He led them back. They were able to convert first down after first down, right down the field, and scored and won the dang game. But that was also the coming out party for all those receivers. Remember, we had so many true freshman receivers playing in that game. Obamanu, Aroma Shadu, Mix, I don't think Taylor. I think we redshirted Courtney Taylor because he was a quarterback coming out of a small school, so he had to learn the job more. But that was an awesome game. We almost won, and that was the last time that we played in California. Justin pointed out, and he had Jason Campbell also in there commenting that team came within like a point or like one play or one possession of winning three of the four games they lost. They ended up 9-4. But they came so close to going like 12-1 or whatever. Now, you know the one, right?
That we lost?
Yeah. In other words, we lost four. Three of them were like one possession games, but there was the one that was hopeless.
Oh, the Arkansas.
Oh, there you go. I knew you knew. Yeah, that's the one where, what's his name?
Fred Talley?
Oh, gosh.
He's still running?
Still running. Never stop, Fred. Never stop. He went up one side and down. That Arkansas team lost three SEC games, and we would have gotten into the SEC championship game over them, despite getting killed by them if we hadn't lost to Georgia on the last freaking play of the game on that stupid Michael Jackson pass. Yeah. Ugh, yeah. That's another bad one. There were so many games that year. The USC game down to the last possession, the Florida game overtime, the Georgia game last play of the game basically. I think there was a couple of plays after it, but last play. And that was also the game where Ronnie Brown had gotten hurt. Cadillac was already out, and we were trying to run Ronnie in the fourth quarter with banged up ankles, and he couldn't move, remember? And he kept getting tackled for losses. All we had to do was just grind it out, get first downs and keep the clock running, and we couldn't get a first down because Ronnie got hurt. That's why the next game against Alabama, we had to start Trey Smith. We were down to our last running back, but fortunately he got the job done. So, well, anyway, that's all the football news I have. You have anything else for the Pigskin?
No, other than the position preview, we're going to do in a minute. But yeah, we did want to talk about the basketball opponents before we got into that.
Yeah, yeah. So what do we know now? We've found out, well, let's go ahead and do that. Well, actually, we got a little football news, too. Kerryon Johnson, I mentioned before, has become the director of player development for the University of North Alabama. So Kerryon is officially, I guess, out of the NFL and into the coaching job now.
Or at least I'm happy for him. I look forward to seeing how he develops there. And the other big news this week was that Terry Price passed away.
Did they not call him Tick Price? Was that not where I knew that name?
I think so. Yeah. And again, a guy that played at A&M, but then was at a coach at Auburn. A defensive end coach, and then recently was on the A&M staff and widely regarded as a good, really good human being by people that were around Auburn during his time.
He was on Tuberville's staff, I remember almost the whole time. Yeah, he was Terry Tick Price is how I always remember seeing with quotation marks. So yeah, that's too bad. Really hate that. Yeah, he was a good guy, and we had good. Obviously, very effective in that role for those years.
Mm-hmm.
Plainsman Park, they're going to renovate it. They've got a multi-year plan to spruce it up a little bit. The baseball facility, that'll be nice. They've always keep making it better and better. It seems like
it's very nice now, but there's a lot of demand for baseball tickets. The baseball team's good, and I think there's a willingness to create more seats. So that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, while the iron's hot. I remember when we were there, it was just some aluminum bleachers.
That's it. It's much nicer now.
That's much nicer. It's like a little miniature Busch Stadium or whatever. What do they call the Braves Stadium now? It's not
Truist.
It was when I lived there. It was Turner Field. Before I moved there, it was the
Fulton County Stadium.
It was Atlanta Fulton County Stadium.
Fulton County Stadium was a great facility.
And this was so funny, John, is Atlanta and St. Louis's stadiums have always looked just like each other. When Atlanta had Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, Busch Stadium was one. It was those white circle, right? The all-purpose 70s stadiums that everybody hated. And
the football and baseball teams shared it.
Yes. Right? And then Atlanta tore theirs down and built the Georgia Dome, I believe. And St. Louis tore theirs down and built the new Busch Stadium, which looks just like Turner Field used to look. Except one of them was brick with green. One was brick with black. Was Turner Field green or black, the metal?
I think it was green, but...
Okay, then this one's black. I drive by it all the time. I can't, because it's right on the other... When you drive on the interstate from Illinois to St. Louis, across the Mississippi River, you drive, like, in the shadow of Busch Stadium. It's right there. So I could reach my hand out the passenger window and touch Busch Stadium anytime I go to Costco, basically. It's pretty cool. Oh, we went to the MLS stadium, by the way, last week. Our family went up to the St. Louis City. We got a brand new MLS team, expansion team. They've been in first place in the West all season. And man, you know, the amenities we enjoyed at the basketball game, where it's like they were trying to give you an experience. It wasn't like, you know, sports used to be, you go, you sit down on bleachers, you have maybe some popcorn or something, you have a Coke in a plastic cup. No matter how rich or poor you are, no matter what the experience, is a very small d democratic experience. Everybody is treated the same. Sports have come a long way. It's now about, oh, you have more money? Come buy these tickets. Oh, you have even more money? Come over to this section, right? We're gonna vacuum the money out of your pocket no matter how much you have. And that's what, I mean, this MLS stadium is like a vacuum cleaner to take all your money. Whatever amount of money you bring in there, they'll hook you up with the place that will take. You know, what it reminds me of in that way is Disney World.
Yes.
Disney World and modern sports facilities are both hyper-engineered to extract the most money out of your bank account before you go home. And the trick is to make you think you had as good of a time as possible while they were taking all your money, right?
You loved it.
Yeah, well, exactly.
You want to do it again.
Exactly. So in the old days, you'd see a sporting event. Now you got to have a whole production, right? Have a whole production. So they have, like, premium food. You know, they got this Brazilian, brasserie beef restaurant right behind where we were sitting. Everything was top-notch. It's really cool. But it made me think, and I wanted to share that with you and with the audience, that it's amazing to me how in our lifetimes we've seen sporting events go for viewers, for attendees, go from being sit on this bleacher uncomfortably for 2 or 3 hours and have a Coke in a plastic cup to, you know, like first class on British Airways, basically. You know, it's amazing.
It's true. But you hit on it at the beginning. The goal is the same.
Oh, yeah.
Get the money out of you.
Get the money. That's right.
But also, we could view it as making a better fan experience, too.
Oh, yeah. And I said before, what we got to do at that basket at the Auburn basketball game last fall, and that's what I told Amy. I said, look, I said, it used to be that you'd want to go to a bunch of sporting events because each one was okay. If the game itself, something great happened, that was your big memory, right? They scored. Oh, they won the game. You know, they won the championship. Now the game is just the thing going on in the background, like a TV on at a bar. And it's about your experience there. And I told Amy, I said, I could only do this about once a year. I said, I'd like to do this once a year, but we could only do it about once a year. You know what I mean? It's like you go from let's get season tickets because they're cheap and go sit on the bleachers to, man, that's going to cost us a lot of money. But, you know, once a year, it would be a fun thing. Like instead of going on vacation in July, we'll go to a MLS game in St. Louis, you know. So it's just interesting how that's changed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's for the better or the worse, but I guess it's certainly different.
It's fair.
All right. Let's see. Oh, I was going to complain about the magazines that I was able to find two now, Athlon and Lindy's. And, John, the freaking Lindy's has Notre Dame on the cover. I couldn't even get anything with SEC. Missouri is in the SEC last I checked, although you have to double check with fans around the SEC. I don't think they're going to necessarily endorse that. But you wouldn't know that the state next to mine is in the SEC and that I live in the metroplex area of the biggest city in that state because there's no SEC anything here. I've said it before. They don't care. They care about the Cardinals. They care about the Blues hockey. They're really excited about the MLS team, city. That's it. When the Rams left, they were like,
I was going to say, they really care about hating the Rams owner.
Yes. Oh, we hate Kroenke. Yeah, no doubt. Hate that guy. No doubt about that. Can't stand him. Let's see. Oh, yeah, I was going to tell you this. So it's no secret we're working on a new book, and it does involve the Iron Bowl. That's all I'm going to say. But in researching the history of the Iron Bowl, I've already found three Alabama should forfeit. Does this surprise you at all?
No.
I wasn't expecting such a rebuking no. That was good. No.
No. Of course not. Yeah. That's the least surprising thing you've said on this podcast.
That's right. That's right. And as soon as I mentioned it on Twitter, immediately somebody came back with the name of the exact Alabama coach I was thinking of. And I was like, yep, that's it. Old Doc Pollard. We'll get to it. Anyway, we'll talk a lot about that book as the time comes, but we're not really near there yet. All right, so you want to talk about the SEC basketball opponents?
Yeah, again, as Van said, we don't know the order, so we don't know the full schedule. We don't know the rest of – there's a little bit of non-conference schedule to be finalized. But in terms of the basketball schedule, the home and home opponents, so we'll play these teams home and away, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, okay?
Yep.
And then these teams only at home, Kentucky, LSU, South Carolina, A&M.
Yep.
And these teams only on the road, Arkansas, Florida, Missouri, Tennessee. So
there's two things in there that immediately make me happy.
Okay.
Kentucky at home, we always want that. That's always a big, huge event when we get Kentucky at home. There's only so much Kentucky to go around, and every team in the SEC wants a game against Kentucky in their own home stadium, right? So we're very fortunate to get that. And also,
and the vet students lobbied hard, and they came through.
That's what we always say, right? They take over that dang stadium. And at Missouri, which is a big thing for me, right?
I knew you were going
to
say that.
See, because I didn't get – I think they played there last year, and I didn't get to go. I was so mad. But it was like on a Wednesday night, and Amy's like, no, it's the middle of school week. We can't go. And I'm like, dang it. So, because it's funny – One of the last times that Auburn played at Missouri before last year was 2020, and that was the last thing my family did before the big you-know-what lockdown.
Yeah.
I remember we went to Missouri, went to that game, came home, the season ended, the tournament started, and then that was it. Everything.
So
next thing I know, I'm watching Jelly's Marble Races on YouTube, John. That was the day, man. Those were the days. The marble racing on YouTube. We were hurting. Virtual IndyCar and virtual Formula One races on YouTube. Man, it was hard to get through those months. But we did get a whole book written.
And we put out a bunch of podcasts.
We put out a bunch of good podcasts. Yeah, we were doing the marble racing versions of podcasts that summer.
We could do marble racing in a podcasting medium. We'd have done it.
But. That's right. That was awesome. I told Amy the other day, I said, you know, the pandemic was horrible, but honestly, I could take laying out in the yard in a hammock with my iPad for weeks at a time again and not be too sad, honestly. There was a positive side to some of it. It's a terrible, terrible thing for most people, I understand that, but you know, there was a little silver lining for some of us. So what is that all we know about the basketball schedule?
Yeah, I just going to say, I think it's pretty manageable. I mean, going to Arkansas and Tennessee will be tough.
Yeah.
But I think it's overall, we should be pretty happy with how that balanced out.
And the team looks good, too. I feel pretty good with Broome back and everything, the new point guard. I mean, they got a chance to do really well. I'm excited. Can't wait for this basketball season. All right. This is what everybody's been waiting for. John's position previews, and every year we do this in the summer, kind of leads us up to the big barbecue show coming up in a few weeks. And so what we do is every week, John goes through and breaks down one position on the team, offense or defense or special teams, and kind of lets us know where it stands, what's going on, everything, and usually has some good factoids. So, John, I'm going to hand everything over to you. Lead us through this first installment of the Auburn 2023 position previews. Dun, dun, dun.
See, now we need a sound effect.
Well, how about if I go... This is the Auburn AU Wishbone position preview. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Best I can do on short notice.
That was perfect. All right, so why are we doing this and kind of how are we going to do this? The first is the reason that we need these position previews more than ever.
Yes.
Because... we pay attention to this stuff, and I'm not positive I can name everybody in the depth chart right now, which is not a good place for me. So we need to do this as a group tour because there's been a lot of change. Who left? Who stayed? But also to look at the position. How has the position changed with a new coaching staff in the scheme? What did this position do last year? Kind of what do we expect out of it this year? And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to try to use some numbers in this too. But we'd start with, because, you know, is there anything else you want to know, Van or listener, when we're doing these? One of the things I thought about was doing it on a, who's at what class, like who's freshman, sophomore, junior, seniors as we go, right?
Okay.
So then you know, like, how many, because especially with the transfers you brought in, some of them are 1-year guys and some of them are 4-year guys. So.
Right. Yeah. It varies for sure.
Yeah. So understanding that and how they fit in with the returning players in the years left, I think really matters. So that's my goal with this. If you have suggestions or things you want to see or you want to hear about in the position previews, let me know and we'll do it. So I thought we'd start with something easy and simple as we kind of break in the concept. And the first one is we're going to start with this kicker. Okay. We start with special teams and we start with kicker. And we lost Anders Carlson, who ended up shocking all of us by getting drafted by the Packers. And all the Auburn fans were like, wait, what? What happened?
We were happy, but we just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, we were happy for him.
Yeah.
But also kind of like, wow, okay.
I mean, tell me this. Auburn kickers that didn't get drafted, I'm not sure about a whole bunch of them. I know his brother did. But Wes Byram didn't get drafted. I'd have taken Wes Byram over Anders Carlson, honestly, if only just because of his injury and everything. He was never, you know, super accurate or long after, especially after his injury.
I think they feel like they can get him back to where he was.
Yeah.
And he had the difference between either one of the Carlsons and Wes Byram is like they're big kids with a lot of leg strength.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that's a big thing. So again, one of the secret, there was a lot of things on last year's team that were not good. Okay.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was worse than
potatoes.
Okay.
Sorry. Fair. Had to.
But one of the things that was worse than we thought it would be was the kicking. Like we thought going into last year that it would be a team strength.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't. And again, he got hurt. I'm not blaming him for that, but it's just the reality of what happened. Anders Carlson was 12 for 17 on field goals last year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And we were actually bad at kickoffs with him kicking off in particular. They didn't let the new kid kick off. When he got hurt, they had the other walk-on kicker kicked off. And Auburn was 121st in the country in terms of touchbacks.
God.
We were last in the SEC in touchbacks, and we allowed a lot of yards on the returns. So that's it. It's not good.
It's much worse than I thought.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think, oh, we're going to be that'll be something that will be, you know. We'll be good at this. We'll have an advantage over other teams on this and that kind of stuff. No. Auburn averaged 16 yards a return on kickoffs, and our opponents averaged 22 yards a return on kickoffs.
No, that adds up.
Mm-hmm. So that, and again, it's easy to get a touchback in college football right now, and we couldn't get them. So that was a real problem. We have to get better at this. So Carlson got hurt, about two-thirds of the way through the season, and then in stepped freshman, highly recruited freshman kicker Alex McPherson, whose older brother kicked at Florida, and now is the kicker for the Bengals. And he came in at the end of the year and went 6 for 7. You know, went 2 for 3 against A&M, and then 2 for 2 against Western Kentucky, and 2 for 2 against Alabama. So looked pretty good doing that. And I think he's clearly the guy. And I think there's, you know, with the positions that I worry about, I don't worry about kicker, but yeah, I didn't worry about kicker last year. And
well, McPherson was the number one high school kicker, right?
Yes.
We always get that. It's amazing. I don't understand it. Coaches come and coaches go at Auburn, but we always get like the best kicker in the country every year or one of them. And I'm glad. I don't know. I don't know why, but we do. We've kept that revolving door going for since my senior year of high school.
We have had an amazing run of kickers, and I think McPherson is going to be the next one of those guys.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be an absolute stud, but we won't know until it's a pressure moment, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, he has all the pedigree and everything, and they'll give him every opportunity. So. But yeah,
and he was a freshman last year, so he's got 3 years left. So that's pretty exciting to feel good about. You know, theoretically, we have a good, talented young kicker who's got 3 years left. So feel good about that.
And we'll probably only get better, surely, right? So,
yes.
All right. So that's it. So that's the kicking situation. I guess we will continue next time with somebody else on the kicking team, on the special teams.
We're going to do punting, and then we'll do return guys, together or separately. So,
looking forward to the return one, because I think I know where that's going to go, and that's going to be very interesting to hear some stuff about that.
It will be.
Yes. All right. We'll have to put out the batty signal. Yeah, be cool. We have a super punter. So between the super punter and the batty signal on the kick returner, we have basically putting the Justice League together on our special teams. I like it. I like it. I've just been watching the Superman Batman movie today. As a matter of fact, that's on my mind. So, John, we were talking about how we've got the AU Wishbone Book Club coming up, where we're going to talk about the Al Borges book. We also are going to try to have him on the show. He sounded like he's up for it, so we just got to have a conversation with him about when and where.
Van blocking the headline right here. Al Borges coming on the AU Wishbone to talk about his book and his time as offensive coordinator at Auburn. If you have questions for Al Borges,
yeah,
let us know.
That would be nice.
We're going to ask him, and we're going to talk to him about his book, Deny of the Tiger, which Van has completed and which I am making rapid progress on.
It's a fun read, is it not? I didn't know if you'd even had a chance to start it yet, so I was going to ask you.
Yes,
fun read. His personality really comes through in it, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. You can hear him talking, which I don't have to talk to him, where he typed the whole thing up or he dictated it and was ghostwritten or what, I'm sure. But his voice definitely comes through strong in it. So we're looking forward to that. Yeah, it was a fun book to read in a lot of ways, and I have a lot to say about it. All right, so we got a few more things to do here, but first we got to thank the patrons. Go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com. And I noticed I need to kind of refresh the page a little bit, because the auwishbone.podbean.com, where the podcast actually lives, it actually looks, I think, neater now. It's got that big header with Aubie and everything. So I want to spruce up auwishbone.com. It's a little elderly looking, but it does have access to most of the last couple of years of episodes on it. And then you can click over to the Podbean. There's a link to the Podbean page there too. But I noticed that because of all of our hyping of our books, the big orange button to become a patron, which is critically important, obviously, has gotten pushed down the page a little bit. I don't want people to have to scroll too far to find that. So I'm going to get on here in a little while, and I'm going to move the big orange button that I talk about every week. I'm going to move it up higher so you see it when you go to that page. But go to that page. For right now, scroll down a little bit and click on the big orange button that says Become a Patron, and you can join up and join in all the fun with our family. Here now are the fine folks who are taking advantage of being able to put whatever they like in their Patreon name, and that's what I read, including soundboard direction. So this is the most vocal intensive part of the show for me every week. Let me drink something. Stand by. All right, here we go. I am ready to tackle it once again.
Me, 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 me.
La, 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 la. Ha-hum. Ha-hum. All right, here we go. We have to thank Samuel Salvatore, Boris the Tiger's Burner account, Carl Von Drunker, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Logan Chilton, Ann Kangian, Bill Weathers, Bradley Blackman, Daniel Odom, Eric Morgan, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, Matt Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor says... What?
No!
John, I got to remember to catch us up on our UMass hate preparation before the episode's over. So make a little note. We got to remember to do that. Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, our good old, this is the standard now. Let me mix it up a little bit. We haven't done this one in a while.
Freeze. Freeze. Ice. Freeze. Ice. Winter. Five. Frozen. Ice. Freeze. Winter. Ice. Ice. Freeze. Winter. Winter. Freeze. Cold. Frosty.
There you go.
Billy Squire.
There they are.
All right. Alex Brown, Ben Bloodworth, Ben crossed me up by changing it and changing it back. Dang it, Ben. Bleeds orange and blue. Calibrating my fun meter in the back room of
Jones Barbecue Foot Massage.
That's right. Chris Hilton, Dan Thompson, Earl Ricks, Bobby. I try not to tell dad jokes, but when I do, he thinks they're funny. Hello, hey ho, ho, ho.
Not for while you can, the monkey boy.
That's right. If the early bird catches the worm, I'll sleep in until there are pancakes, says 76 Tiger Esquire, our sleazy shyster. random sound clip. Let's go this week to...
Well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you here.
I haven't used that one in a while. But interestingly enough, by the way, Alan J. Porter and I just reviewed Live and Let Die on our sister show on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. And by the way, I asked Alan, because he's from Britain, so he's the one that gets to decide these things. I said, are we still on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, or is it now on His Majesty's Secret Podcast? And Alan pointed out that all the movies have been made while there was a her. Every single one of them, right? And so it's still her. We're not changing. Which I'd rather be named after Elizabeth than that Chuck anyway. Jacob and Robin Fleming, Junior Rose Green, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Lane Middleton, Mickey B. No One Fights Like Gaston, Owl Go Rhythm and Blues, Paul Miles, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Rusty Owen, Steve Harlan, Theodore Geary, Todd Robinson, Warhammer 6, WDE Richie, When Two Vegans Get in an Argument, Is It Still Called a Beef? Hey, hey, ho!
For while you can, the monkey boy.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, I do my best with to kind of sell these. Wiggle Wiggle and Wes Atkinson. Why don't football players go to a bakery? Because they can get a turnover whenever they want on the field. Hey, ho, hello.
For while you can, the monkey boy.
Man, we've got the dad jokes coming out of the woodwork this week. This is impressive. You're not getting a lot of the Soviet national anthem, but you're getting plenty laughing while you can, monkey boys, from Buckaroo Banzai. All right, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Win Carroll, Winston Boddy, Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, what? Brandon Smith, Carter Glouse, Colby Butler, Corey Smyer, David D., David Simpson, Die Bama, Josh Teal. You know, it occurs to me, John, at some point we're going to have to put together like a lexicon. Alan J. Porter, my co-host on The Bond Show, he did the James Bond lexicon, right, a whole encyclopedia. I feel like we need to do an encyclopedia of all the stuff associated with our show. I don't know if it would be 10 pages long, but, you know, there's like all the in jokes and private stuff, and I don't know.
I like it.
Maybe we'll do that. Let's see. Just Wait Till Next Year, Kevin Mahan, Luther and Kelly Ottaway. Matt Luke took Ole Miss to 6th in the West 3 years in a row, and he still has a better win percentage than Hugo Slees. Wow, that's remarkable. Melissa Blackstone, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, and our one-time and anonymous donors, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Spider-Man has a winter jacket made of Mediterranean flatbed. It's called a Peter Parka.
For while you can, the monkey boy.
Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Wiggle87, at the Mad Reaper Pepper Company on Instagram. I do not have a Mad Reaper Pepper Company update this week, but I still haven't done my hot sauce show. I keep forgetting. I got to do the hot sauce video before the summer's over. Alex Nguyen, Ben Amos, Ben Regis, Brian Albanese, Charles Mooney, Chris Cuomo, Chris Braun, Clay Henson, Colonel Dad, a.k.a. Ari Ben Zane. I'm missing my category, mister. I want to appreciate Colonel Dad also supports our Babylon 5 show, and Andy and I appreciate him for doing that. Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, Darren Pyle, Elizabeth Donald,
we got to get better at celebrating.
How do two cats end a fight? They hiss and make up. I am Tiger.
For while you can, the monkey boy.
Yes.
It's in the water now. Wow.
It is. They're coming out of the woodwork. Whatever other metaphors you want to use, they are really coming out. It's becoming, I've said before, right? Multiple people have told me that the thanking the patron segment used to be the most boring, and now it's one of their favorite parts. So I'm doing what I can to, but it's the patrons that do it, right? I'll buy this for a dollar. James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, Jeremiah Schumann, Jim McCrory, Joey Miller, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rain says that the barbecue...
You have failed me for the last time.
Yeah, well, a.k.a. Auburn Dad for life, but yeah, well, it'll get another shot in a few weeks. Mark Squire, MVP captivating Kathy Bright.
Your love of the halfling's leaf has clearly slowed your mind.
Kathy's a big 80s music fan, I know, and I just recorded a new White Rocket episode a couple of days ago. It's going to go up Tuesday morning. Oh, crap, I didn't realize that's the same time the Wishbone. So you will get two White Rocket Entertainment shows tomorrow morning about 5 o'clock Eastern, something like that. And one of them is this show that you're listening to now, and the other is White Rocket's Music of the Night of 1983. David Wright and Jason Colvin of Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast and I got together and recorded our favorite. We count down our favorite 5 songs that were that came out in 1983 and our 5 favorite albums of 1983. And I play the music in the background so you can, like, you know, I think you guys will all really enjoy that episode because that was a good music year. So tune in to the White Rocket Entertainment podcast tomorrow when you get done with this show. New York Tiger says, let's dispense with this fallacy because LSU was never one of Auburn's traditional rivals. I think, oh, yeah.
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
There it is. It's Rubio, yeah. Nick Craig, Paul Bankson, Rich Hammett, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland. Appreciate you guys still hanging around. Spanky, I'm at the bottom of this list because...
Scott Wilson!
Back for while you can, the monkey boy.
Sports Illustrated's Auburn Elvis, Stephen Thompson, the Slinko family, Tim Sauls, Trevor Johnson. Why are you booing John? He's right. Why is Auburn's library called the Drawn Library if they don't want us to draw on all the books?
For why you can, the monkey boy.
Wow.
I'm telling you, man. They're bringing it tonight. I was just writing up something about Ralph Drawn, the president of Auburn University back in the day. He for whom the library is named, and his wife, I believe, the dorms are named, right? I think it's his wife, maybe it's him.
Spent a lot of hours in that library.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about that. And Brant Rumble. Sorry, Brant. I left you off there at the end. Plus our one-time and anonymous donors. Yeah! There we go. All right. Go to www.auwishbone.com. And thank you all so much for your support. Let's see. Now, we don't have a Fantasy Formula One update. The Austrian Grand Prix is this coming weekend, so on Monday night after it, we'll catch you up on where things stand there. I don't know if we have a Guess the Game this week, but I'm going to look and see if Jared, like, deposited one in our mailbox at the very last minute, and if he did, we'll get it in. Let me see if I missed it. This is, like, live television here, but live radio. I'm going to look for, I try to remember what Jared's email address is. Not Jared Albrecht. It is, June 20th. He sent it so far back that I had not downloaded it. He sent it he sent it 6 days ago. So what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to download them. So y'all, this is great radio, I know. But I'm downloading number one. I'm downloading number two. I'm downloading number three. Jared, this is not your fault. This is entirely my fault. I just was not prepared.
While Vian is preparing, I'll talk about something here for a minute. I'm just going to talk to the listeners for a minute while you're downloading.
I got it.
Who can it be now?
Hello, Van, John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist here with Guess the Game number 97. Guess the Game 97 is brought to you by listener Colby Butler. Let's give a listen to what Colby sent in.
There's with the snap. Stands in, throws wide open, touchdown, Auburn! 17 yards, and the Tigers have the lead. What a play call, a wheel route by perfect timing on the play call. He's the slot receiver, the second one into the boundary, goes down, turns it out, and wheels it up the sideline. Wide open, a 96-yard drive by the Auburn Tigers to take the lead.
Okay, I will see you guys in the hint file and get rid of some of those bleeps for you when we get there.
All right, the announcers were...
That was Rod.
Which means the time frame is?
Like 2003 to 2018.
Okay. Auburn threw a wheel route for a touchdown, 17 yards, to take the lead on a 96-yard drive. It sounded like they were really excited, like it was a big game and a big play.
My first thought when he said how wide open he was that play against Oregon when Bo Nix threw the ball out to Stove, remember? Nobody was covering him. He's like, he's like waving his arms, and Bo's like, up, 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 just threw it out there, and he walked in. That's what I was thinking of. They didn't cover him. But that was, I think that was shorter than 17 yards.
I don't remember.
I feel like it was.
I like that as our first go-to, but we had to go to the hit file.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a game, and when it's our announcers, it's fun, but it takes away one element, which is how big of a game was it, right? Because if it's Vern, we're like, oh, this was a 2:30 CBS game, you know. Yeah.
But they felt like, to me, their energy,
yeah,
on the touchdown call, that wasn't like, yeah, we're taking the lead on, you know,
yeah,
Eastern Kentucky, whatever.
Right. Yeah, no, that sounded big. And we went on a 96-yard drive, hit a wide-open receiver from the slot on a wheel route. So, okay, well.
96-yard drive. We started at our own 4.
Yeah.
We either stopped them or we messed up the kickoff and started our own 4.
How do you feel about Stidham against Texas A&M in that game where we came back and scored like 3 passing touchdowns in the fourth quarter?
So the Seth Williams,
yeah,
emergence game?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
And that's a possibility.
Yeah.
All right. I'm ready to go to the hint file now. I just had to throw a couple
let's
out.
Do it.
All right, guys. Let's get rid of those bleeps and give this another listen.
There's Marshall with the snap. Marshall stands in, throws wide open. Touchdown!
Texas A&M.
Marcus Davis, 17 yards. And the Tigers have the lead. What a play call. A wheel route by Marcus Davis. Perfect timing on the play call. He's the slot receiver. The second one into the boundary. Goes down, turns it out, and wheels it up the sideline. Wide open. A 96-yard drive by the Auburn Tigers to take the lead.
There you go. I will see you guys in the answer file.
All right, Nick Marshall, right, to our current receivers coach.
Marcus,
right?
Davis. We still get anything about the opponent.
We still don't know a
no
thing about
opponent player names at all.
Or, yeah, nothing. Nick Marshall throwing a pass like that. Again, assuming we're back to it's the only games we won, so it's not going to be the Iron Bowl where Nick Marshall threw for a bunch of yards.
So it's 13 or 14.
Yes.
Was Davis there in 13, or was he only there in 14?
Wasn't he in the – didn't he play in the Rose Bowl, the BCS game?
I don't remember.
He wasn't the one that appeared dropped out of the helicopter, was he?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. I couldn't remember.
That was Ray, I think.
All right. Yeah, I'm trying to think of – we had a lot of games where we had some big scores in that little period there. The Tennessee game, we lit them up for all kind of – it could be that, 13 Tennessee – although I think a lot of it was on the ground.
And we were behind and took the lead with this play.
Yeah, or tied and took the lead, maybe. Man, I mean, there's just several it could be. And like you said, we just don't have a whole lot of information beyond who our guys were. But that doesn't ring a bell.
It's not one of the LSU games from that two-year period, right? Because we lost in 13.
Yeah. 14 and we killed. It could be 14. We destroyed them in 14. We beat them like 45-3 or something in 14.
Yeah, but again, it's the took the lead part. 96-yard drive. So
yeah.
I don't think it's that game.
All right. It's not Kansas State, is it? He was not like the main receiver on that team. That team had the 14 team.
No,
had
he was a very complimentary player.
Yeah, the 14 team had Duke Williams and that big tall guy. Sammy Coates. That's what I'm trying to. Yeah. Duke Williams and Sammy Coates were the receiving weapons on that team.
Maybe A&M, and it could be A&M at 13.
It could.
The Manziel game.
Yes, it could. It very well could be A&M. That was my first thought, was A&M 13.
Okay, let's go with that.
All right, let's see what we got, Jared.
Okay, gentlemen, we are in the answer file. And if you figured out that this is our beloved Auburn Tigers playing Ole Miss in 2014... then you nailed it down rather well. I want to thank Colby for sending that in. If you have a suggestion for guest the game, you want to be like Colby and send it in, it's pretty easy. I am at Yard Sale Artist. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It's all at Yard Sale Artist. Or you can email me directly at Jared. That's J-A-R-R-O-D at theyardsaleartist.com. Until next time, Van, John, Wriggle.
That was another really good one from Jared and I guess from Colby.
That was an excellent one.
That was. I love when they totally stump us because, I mean, there was enough information there to figure it out if we could have placed that drive.
Yes.
Or if we remembered Marcus Davis having that one game. But the 2014 Ole Miss game, I got to tell you, John, I have no idea. Wait a minute. 2014 Ole Miss. You know what that was? This wouldn't have helped me get it, or you, I don't think. But that was that not the game where we won because their great receiver broke his leg on the last?
Dropped the ball.
Yeah.
Yes. I think it was that game.
Frost tackled him.
Mm-hmm. I think it was that game.
So I don't remember anything from that game up until that play. It was like, we scored, they scored, we scored, they scored, whatever, and then that was the big thing. Now I'm going to have to go out on YouTube and it is one thing I enjoy about Guess the Game is it always suggests for me games I need to go back and watch on YouTube. So I may do that. YouTube is a great thing. Let's see. All right. I'm going to delete our little note about not being a Guess the Game so I don't confuse myself again. All right. So I guess at this point, there's nothing to do, but...
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
I want you to put the word out there that we back up.
There you go. What we got, John?
Man, we don't have any listener questions. The listeners have let me down.
Wow.
I'm sitting here ready to read the questions. Some weeks we've had a plethora of questions. This week we had nothing. So there's only one thing to do at this moment, Van.
I don't remember us ever having that.
I know, so I'm just putting the word. You got to put the word out there. We need the questions.
I want you to put the word out there.
Yeah.
But what we need to do at this moment, though, is come together and hate Mercer.
UMass.
Mercer, UMass, UMass.
It's all the same.
Hate those guys.
Hate them all.
It's UMass Hate Week 2023.
Okay, now we need a listener to like lay that over the video of the three guys go down the road with the fife and drum and the guy limping, you know.
And it would be Aubie and like a cheerleader and a football player or something like that, or a helmet. One of them has the helmet on and bandages and everything. And oh, you could do a lot with it. You got to have Aubie in there, though. They could do a whole lot with that. Or at least have those guys, but have Auburn gear on them. Like put an AU on them. And I like it. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's cool then. That gets us to the end. Any final thoughts before? Oh, we got to go around the SEC. Crap. Hold on. We got to take a trip.
Please clap.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
There they are.
Well, I'm not a crook.
Well, we have a couple of tidbits around the SEC, mainly to do with LSU. So why don't you tee us up here with what happened?
Van, as we like to remind people, Auburn has a reputation for being the school in the SEC the NCAA goes after, but much more often they end up hitting other schools, and Auburn is relatively unscathed relative to some of our competitors. And LSU, once again, football and basketball put on probation for 3 years and forfeited a lot of games.
All right, I have two questions here. One, they're still putting teams on probation? I thought that was so 1994, okay, A. And B, when LSU said to the NCAA, dude, really? And the NCAA replied,
I'm afraid that my condition has left me cold to your pleas of mercy.
That's right, LSU.
Nice. Very well done.
So
Van, not only did they put them on probation, they backdated the probation to back when the investigation started. So the 3 year probation ends in 3 months.
I've never heard of such a thing. They retroactively probated them. So they've been on probation all this time and we didn't know it. And what did it do to them? They were on TV. Did they have scholarship reductions during those years?
They felt shame, Van.
My
they well, I tell you what it did is they fired Will Wade because he was caught on tape paying a recruit. That's what it did to them.
About
he was
time.
Given a show cause.
Yeah,
and they're you know they had to forfeit a bunch of games. I don't think they had any scholarship penalties in either sport, so that's a bunch of.
I just hope that there have been some you know among the people attacking Bruce Pearl over the years for something that wasn't remotely as serious as this, right? What we've talked about many times, we wrote a book about it. What Bruce Pearl did was not remotely as serious as this. I just hope that there have been some LSU fans out there ragging on, jumping on Bruce Pearl for being some kind of an outlaw and a criminal. And now their guy, their coach, is the one that gets the show cause and all of this. But the retroactive probation thing, I've never heard of such a thing. I don't know how that works. How does that even make any sense? What does that even do?
You're asking the wrong question about NCAA penalties, man. It doesn't make any sense. There's no reason to cooperate with them ever.
No.
It means nothing.
Well,
and clearly, is it influencing their behavior in any way?
Three
is it
months.
Going to deter another school from doing what they did?
Wow, man. Well, all I can say to that is...
You are out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
Clearly the whole trial is out of order, man. Gosh. Well, as you said, they had to forfeit a bunch of games going all the way back into the Les Miles era. And what did this do to Les Miles? Because he suffered more than anybody, in a way.
It's funny. He did suffer more than anybody. Les Miles drops below the necessary threshold to make the College Football Hall of Fame. Not that he should have been.
I would have put Les Miles in the College Football Hall of Fame if only for winning a national championship with two losses, which you should be famous for that alone, and for defying the space-time continuum the way he constantly did with his final calls in the last few seconds of games. That alone, man, just that, was it 2015, 2012? I mean, just, oh my gosh.
He should have been in the hall of the good and very lucky.
They almost did it to us in 2016, too, but they fortunately got overturned on that one. Remember, that's the one where they thought they won, and then the referee came out and said, no, you lose, go away. That was the loser leaves town game, and so he left town. Him and Gus, man. Yeah, that's just amazing. So the other thing that means is that the 2013 Auburn team now went undefeated all the way until they played Florida State.
It's true.
It should. I mean, I'm going to look at it right now. I got like 15 incidents of Wikipedia open right now anyway, so I'm might as well. Why not? Let me look at I'm going to look at the 2013 Auburn Tigers season and see what it says about the LSU game. And it still says we lost it. Well, we did not lose it because LSU forfeited. So whoever does the Wikipedia thing, go in there and fix that. Let's see what the 2013 LSU page says. It says, oh, the whole page is pink. Whole page is pink. Vacated. Wow. Somebody's already been hard at work vacating all of LSU's wins that year.
Good.
So what years does it apply to? Obviously 2013.
I think it's 13, 14, 15 for football, something like that.
Ah, 12. 12 is vacated. That's a lot of wins.
Okay, 12. So they lost to the 2012 Auburn Tigers.
They did. Hey, somebody alert our offense. Scott Loeffler just won a game. He won more games not even coaching than he did when he was on the field. Let's see if they've got that one. No. Well, they were number two in the country, too. And that was the game we lost by 2 points. That was a close game. Dang. How did we lose by 2 points to the number two team in the country, LSU, that year? That's just unbelievable. So, yeah, because remember LSU had been in the national championship game in 11 against Alabama. That was the year they had that really good defense. And in 12, they were number two. So, all right, that's all I got around the SEC. Do you have anything you want to throw in there or last words for tonight? Final thought?
Man, what have we learned here? That the scales of justice may turn slowly, but that they do turn.
Eventually, yes.
Toward the path of righteousness.
So the 2007 team with two losses still has their national championship in LSU, but the 12 and 13 teams, among others, now didn't win a game. and the 2020 and Nick Marshall's and Trey Mason's 2013 SEC champion team went undefeated all the way to the BCS. All we need now is for 2013 Florida State to get in trouble. Because, hey, Jameis Winston, you tell me it couldn't happen. It can still retroactively. Dang right. All right, I think we're out of time. I think that's going to do it for tonight. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.
Go to bed.